Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tans in Washington, working on this program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Thursday, April 14, 2022. A chief in Sudan admits his tribesmen attacked the contested Abyei area.
They targeted the cattle camp, the village, and they killed five people and looted all around 2000.
And the UN mission in South Sudan is praising parties to the 2018 peace agreement for making progress.
With the appointment of a single unified command, we expect to see greater coherence in government response to local conflicts across the country.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in the contested Abyei area say dozens of civilians were killed and many others injured after suspected armed Masirian nomads from neighboring Sudan attacked the area Wednesday. The spokesperson for the Abyei administrative area says more than 300 men on tricycles, motorbikes, and four saloon vehicles attacked the area. VOA could not independently verify the number of the armed nomads. Dengai Deng has more for VOA from Juba.
Ajak Deng Mien, the official spokesperson of the Abyei Special Administrative Area Government, says a group of more than 350 suspected armed Masiria Arab tribesmen from Sudan invaded Abyei Wednesday. Mien says the assailants killed 41 people and injured 13 others in the localities of Leo Boma, Nong Boma, and Amiet Market in the eastern and northern parts of Abyei town.
They targeted the cattle camp, the village, and they killed five people and they looted all around 2,000 head of cattle. And then when we were focusing on that event, another attack was taking place at 9 in Nong village in north of Abyei. They burned down the village, they killed whoever was there, and then they moved. So at around 10, they were already in the market of Amiet, and they start shooting open fires randomly.
Mien says one boy was abducted and five people are missing. Mien says the attackers were an organized, well-armed militia. He says some were wearing the uniform of Sudanese police. Mien urged the South Sudanese and Sudanese governments to expedite the determination of the final status of Abyei, saying the people of the region are frustrated by repeated attacks.
Yes, we feel like the government of Sudan and South Sudan should come up with a final status and should push for the Abyei case. Supposed to be the referendum, those who are here, they have done their own referendum and was rejected. We urge the international community and South Sudan and Sudan government to come up with to push for final solution. Because for how long should the people will be suffering like that?
The Sudanese ambassador to South Sudan, Jamal Malik, says he was not officially informed about the latest attacks, but is sorry for the continuous attacks in Abyei, saying the governments of Sudan and South Sudan should determine the final status of Abyei once and for all to deter further attacks in the area.
This is the responsibility of the two governments, not Sudan only. This is there is a joke mechanism that's supposed to be handling this issue of Abyei. So it's not just the government of Sudan. It's a two governments' responsibility. But anyhow, I will check on this.
UNISFA said in a statement today at least 12 suspected Masiria attackers were arrested and the AK put several rifles, says, along with hand grenades. UNISFA says the suspects are being detained at the UNISFA headquarters in Todach. The disputed region of Abyei straddles Sudan and South Sudan borders. When the SPLM signed a comprehensive peace agreement with the Khartoum government in 2005, which led to South Sudan's independence, government leaders could not agree on boundary lines. As a result, Abyei status remains unresolved to this day. The area is steered by the Masiria Arab nomads from the north and the Ngog Dinka. After fighting erupted in 2011, Sudan and South Sudan agreed to allow a neutral peacekeeping mission to foster security until a political resolution was reached. The UN Security Council established the UN Interim Security Force for Abyei in 2011. saying it was deeply concerned about the violence, escalating tensions, and population displacement in the area. The operation monitored the border between the north and the south and facilitated the delivery of humanitarian aid. The force was also authorized to use force in protecting civilians and humanitarian workers in Abyei. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaiding in Juba.
The head of Sudan's Sovereign Council, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, has issued an order for the formation of a 7-member committee, including top military, police, and public prosecution officers, to carry out an investigation into the Abyei incident. The paramount chief of the Messiria Nomads says his group fought back in what he calls self-defense following attacks from the Dinkangok. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Khartoum.
General al-Burhan says the 7-member committee, comprised of military, police and security officers, along with top public prosecutors, is expected to submit its report within 1 week. Mokhtar Babo Nimir, a paramount chief of the Sudanese Misriya Arab Nomads, admits men from his community carried out the latest deadly attack on the Abyei, but says his group responded in self-defense following attacks by the Ngok Dinka. Nimir says he regrets the loss of life on both sides.
Any disagreement among ourselves, our people will be affected by it. Even if one person is killed, we will be held responsible for this. We are supposed to live as one people. We have vast land that we can all occupy. Our ancestors lived together for more than 100 years, and yet they were not educated. Why can't we live together as one people?
Nimir says the Misriya cannot allow their people to be killed and their property to be looted or destroyed. Some Sudanese civil society activists here in Khartoum say the continued attacks and counterattacks between the Misriya and the Ngok Dinka must stop. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus in Khartoum, Hala Al-Karib, who heads the local NGO Strategic Initiative for Women in the Horn of Africa, or SIHA, condemned the recent attack on what she calls innocent and unarmed civilians in northern Abyei. She says such attacks expose more people, especially women and children, to many risks, including rape. Al-Karib attributes the attacks to a lack of rule of law in Sudan and South Sudan.
This is a clear reflection of the situation in Sudan and how it's going to impact South Sudan and other neighboring regions. I think what happened in Abyei is a show of to what extent the lack of rule of law, the militarizations of tribal men.
Al-Karib says, for the sake of peace and stability on both sides, the two governments, regional leaders, and international community need to move quickly to resolve the final status of the disputed area of Abyei. She is urging Sudanese and South Sudanese leaders to consider disarming communities on both sides of the border.
It's very important for different actors, you know, mediators and international community, to understand that the stability of the situation in Sudan is very critical for the stability of the communities on both sides.
Muhammad Salah, Secretary General for the local NGO called Required Bodies, also condemned the attack on Ngok Dinka, saying leaders of both countries must hold the perpetrators responsible. Salah blames both governments for what he calls a lack of political will to develop the area and provide citizens with services.
They should sit down and lay out a development roadmap that engages the citizens from both sides. By now, there would have been a development competition between Sudan and South Sudan for service delivery in the area.
Several attacks and counterattacks have been reported in Abyei and surrounding areas for several months. More than 50 people have been killed and dozens of others injured. The Ngok Dinka and the Misriya Arab Nomads have blamed each other for the violence. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
The United Nations mission in South Sudan has praised recent progress made by the parties to the 2018 peace agreement in unifying the command of security agencies. The special representative of the UN Secretary General in South Sudan says recent decisions made by party leaders should be translated into practical action to move the peace process forward. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
The special representative of the UN mission in South Sudan, Nicholas Haysom, told the reporters in Juba today that steps taken by party leaders to unify the command structure of various forces marks a step forward in implementing key provisions of the peace deal, but those steps must be translated into action. He also says UNMISS is discouraged by recent growing violence, especially in Lier, where thousands of people have been displaced.
I strongly condemn these violent attacks on civilians, but in particular attacks on humanitarians and the looting of life-saving supplies and assets, all of which is unacceptable. Already this year, six humanitarians have lost their lives. We will continue to advocate at the highest levels of government for it to assume a greater responsibility to intervene in the protection of civilians, which includes humanitarians. For humanitarians, saving lives should not mean losing lives. With the appointment of a single unified command, we expect to see greater coherence in government response to local conflicts across the country.
Haysom warns that unless serious steps are taken, conflicts across parts of the country may exacerbate the humanitarian situation, which is competing with the other conflicts in Ethiopia, Sudan, and Ukraine.
Against the backdrop of this intercommunal violence, we are conscious that the country is facing a humanitarian crisis that deepened in 2021. Owing to multiple and overlapping shocks such as flooding and the continued economic impacts of COVID-19.
The country's food security classification report, compiled by the UN and the South Sudan government, says food insecurity is likely to rise by 7% across South Sudan in the coming months compared to last year. Haysom says recent efforts made by partners in the unity government to implement their security arrangements offers a window of opportunity for the parties to carry out key provisions of the peace deal before the transitional period ends early next year.
Now that the parties have reached agreement on the unified command structure, the way is now open for a surge on other critical tasks, which includes transitional justice, undertaking financial, legal and judicial reforms, and the constitution-making process, which is fundamental to building a new social contract to underpin national unity. UNMISS is committed to providing technical support, working with local organisations to encourage an understanding of the constitution-making process and to ensure that the process is inclusive.
Haysom says he does not agree the time is ripe to hold the South Sudan elections at the end of the transitional period in February 2023, but he urges the parties to start technical preparations for the electoral process. Article 1, subsection 20 of the peace deal states that no later than 12 months after the commencement of the transitional period, the president, in consultation with the parties to the agreement and with the approval of the transitional parliament, shall reconstitute a competent and impartial National Elections Commission to conduct elections. It further states that 60 days before the end of the transitional period, the National Elections Commission shall organize elections in accordance with the provisions of the permanent constitution adopted pursuant to the peace deal. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, the United Nations says millions of South Sudanese will face hunger. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how would you start a conversation on a sensitive topic or issue? First of all, you need to know the context, and you need to know what you are going to talk about and why they have brought it in that particular time. Okay. And from there, you make maybe after the introduction, you build the main body and you conclude.
You first need to put out the key things which you want to talk about, which can even capture the interest of the people. Because if you start with something which people doesn't have interest in, they will not give you time to give out what you want to tell them.
You have to know about the issue, and you have to know how to approach the issue. You have to even know how to tackle the issue, and you even have to study on how to speak on the issue to avoid conflict.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. The United Nations wants a record 7.74 million people, or two-thirds of South Sudan's population, are likely to face hunger during this year's lean season between May and July. This is the dangerous period between planting and harvesting, when food stocks are at their lowest. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Among the millions at risk of hunger are an estimated 87,000 people who will face catastrophic levels of acute food insecurity during the lean period. A UN analysis of the food situation in South Sudan released last week warns many of these people will likely die of starvation. This, says the UN Food and Agriculture Organization representative in South Sudan, Mesha Kamalo, is because they will have run out of coping options to feed themselves and their families.
That can only be remedied by urgent and sustained humanitarian assistance in order to save lives and to reestablish livelihoods so that it can see them through the next harvest season.
Speaking from the capital, Juba, Malo says among those most at risk are some 1.34 million severely malnourished children. He says 676,000 pregnant and lactating women also are expected to be malnourished this year and in need of special nutritional treatment. The key drivers of food insecurity and extreme hunger in South Sudan include climate shocks. The country has experienced three consecutive years of heavy flooding, interspersed with periods of drought. This has badly impacted people's ability to cultivate their land and prevent loss of livestock. Malo says ongoing conflict, high food prices, and poor access to basic services also have contributed to the dire situation in the country.
This has been compounded by the low crop production and livestock diseases that have continued to deplete the household coping strategies because of the protracted crisis that have shrunk the income opportunities available in the country.
At the heart of this crisis, Malo says, is the lack of peace. South Sudan endured a civil war that officially ended a few years ago, but parts of the country remained racked with violence. The FAO representative says investing in peace will pay huge dividends. It would, he notes, provide people with the space and time to build the resilience needed to prevent households from falling back into a state of severe hunger. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Even though more girls are going to schools in Tanzania, studies show persistent gender disparity in secondary school education continue to hamper girls' education in Africa. Education advocates say that across the continent, girls face a number of barriers to education which need to be urgently addressed. If African countries are to achieve the UN's Sustainable Development Goal number 4, which calls for inclusive and equitable quality education. Tanzanian education activist Devotha Mulei says mentorship is important to keep girls in school. Mulei tells my colleague Jackson Vunganyi that her organization, Girls' Livelihood and Mentorship Initiative, provides opportunities for secondary school girls in Tanzania to complete their studies.
Mentorship is something that is really new, but it's something that is really, really needed. So having a mentor means having someone who believes in you and your abilities, and someone who is willing to work with you through your journey, your troubles, the challenges that you're going through as a young person. and someone who is always there to really give you the support that you need, the moral support that you need, but also to cheer you up when you're really achieving some little steps. So having a mentor in our context means really having that someone who is okay. Not always there, but you know, you can go to all the time and you can get that support you need.
Right. So let's talk in broader terms about education for girls in Tanzania. Some government policies have come into focus. But let me start off by asking you about, you know, how did the COVID-19 pandemic that we're not fully out of impact girls' education in Tanzania?
Yeah, so from my experience, and I'm speaking mostly from the program that we do and the girls that we work with, the COVID-19 had a big impact, and especially on the girls that we really work with. And the first biggest impact was the families were affected, with parents lost their jobs, and even business was very low. So the income for the family went really, really low. So what does that mean to a girl who is in school? That means now she needs to be focusing on also supporting the family to earn that extra income. So if she needs to engage herself more in the economic activities, that means effect that comes back to that is, you know, now she can focus on studies. Schools were closed. But then instead of being home and keep on studying, they most of them were home and engaging in economic activities. So the loss of education was like one of the biggest things that happened to the girls, because they needed to spend their time helping their families. But also we witnessed increase in violence. So, you know, schools most of the time are the safest place to be for a girl. But now girls are at home for like extended period of time. So one of another impact that we've seen was increasing in violence for girls during the COVID-19 era, when the girls were really staying at home.
Especially during the quarantine times. Now, the government of Tanzania reversed a policy that had banned girls from, you know, adults and mothers from attending school. You know, thousands of girls are now, you know, who were adults and mothers are able to have that option to study in public secondary schools. Aside from pregnancy, what contributes to the high dropout of girls, mostly from higher education?
Yeah, I mean, aside from pregnancy, which contributes a lot, but we see massive failure is something that really, really contributes a lot to girls to drop out of school. So because girls have more than just studying. So when they go home, they have chores to work on. They're expected to be taking care of the rest of the members of the family. So they have very little time to study and to revise. So you find that most girls fail to transit from one class to another because they can't get the grades to take them to the transition. So I'll say the second highest is a massive failure that makes girls drop out of school.
That was Tanzanian education activist Devota Mulei speaking with my colleague Jackson Vunganye during her visit to Washington.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1-202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1-202-630-8011.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's all we prepared for you this Thursday. We now end this show with Bishoke and the song Mume Wango. Listening to Bishoke and the song Mume Wangu. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for spending your time with us this evening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.